From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 13th day of February, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com. He'll show up in our second half hour on the Home Station 2 during our Commodity Week program, along with Arlen Suderman and Ellen Dearden. Later in this first half hour, if you're with us the whole way through, you'll be able to hear from Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions about the weather forecast, and we'll discuss next week's IPT or Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sales as well. That'll take place in Springfield. Travis Mintier from U of I Extension will join us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.31¾. It was a half higher. May futures at $4.42, a quarter higher in December at $4.64½, up a half. Soybeans in the nearby March down 4¼ to $11.33. November 11.13½, down 2¾. And soft red winter wheat 3¾ lower at $5.48¾. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com from Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again on a Friday.
Great to be with you, Todd.
Also looking forward to having you at the Aldag Outlook. That's what, 2 weeks from next Tuesday. Not long now. It'll be pretty darn soon.
Let's hope we keep these 60s and 70s going while we're all traveling back and forth over this time period. It'd be great to get everybody together again this year and hook up for a day and really talk some details about the markets. And pretty interesting times we're in right now. It kind of reminds me of the year I graduated from high school, 1985, the year that Back to the Future came out. Feels like a lot like the Reagan-era policies are being still utilized. So maybe we can touch on that when we see each other in person next month, Todd.
Well, yeah, you bet. That is Tuesday, March the 3rd at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Mike will be there along with a whole bevy of analysts you hear on the air at WILL. You can find details in the agenda online at willag.org. Many of the FarmDoc team will be up front, and Eric Snodgrass, who you'll hear in a bit on this program, will also be there to kick us off. Should be a great show. Just $40. Love to have you there, but you need to register. Do it right now. willag.org. Now, might be a 1985 kind of thing. We could talk about that then. Maybe you could talk about it a little today. But really, I want to know what happened with wheat today after yesterday's rally.
Well, we found out how significant the weather is, I think, on Friday here in the United States, Todd. We really didn't do anything to change the weather issues. Very big concerns when it comes to extreme cold weather coming back into key areas of Eastern Europe, which would include some Ukrainian territory and even some Russian territory, especially in the south. It sounds like the snowpack is not as great there. Also, quite a bit of rain coming for France and Germany, rains that are significant enough that there's concern about the potential for losing some wheat crop over there as well. But the United States, it really flipped in terms of the weather models on Friday versus Thursday. Much better coverage expected this coming weekend. Kind of takes the sting and the support that we had on Thursday from the U.S. Drought Monitor, which jumped another 2% to 45%. That compares to 23% a year ago. And we're starting to see Kansas, my state, start to eke up a little bit, 7% drought versus 3% a week ago. So it was a huge technical week, though, Todd. And I think that's where the wheat really comes into play. Because if you think about the lead month corn, beans, and wheat, we've got some really stiff resistance levels at 435 to 445 in corn, 1135 to 1145 in soybeans, and 535 to 545 in soft red wheat. And including on Friday, we were able to get to 432¾ for a high on the March corn. So we are up against or just through some of these major resistance levels. How major in the case of wheat? We have not seen a monthly close above 540 since January of 2025. And so it's a pretty big deal if we would be able to bust through that, especially given next week's updates from the baseline and the agricultural outlook form.
Yeah, so that Ag Outlook form, I think, is going to be really important. The baseline could change everything. Does that happen very often?
It does in the specific categories like the corn acres versus bean acres. This year, because of the tariffs, I think there's extra potential to see the baseline adjusted, especially given we just got a US-India deal, US-Taiwan deal was announced on Thursday. These bilateral trading deals probably make this a little bit more important than normal in terms of the baseline projections. I say that especially because I don't think USDA, and I was in touch with them on report day, WASDE report day, when it came to the acreage and the yield numbers, that 98.8 million planted corn from this year, I don't think it's going to go anywhere based upon what Lance Honig shared with me on report day. And so theoretically, you'd see a lot more acres rotate back into soybeans. And so really leaves me with the question, we talked about this a lot on Commodity Week, is the idea, are these acres, if they're out there and the USDA supports them, is it justified to be at these price levels in soybeans if USDA doesn't come in and really change the numbers and the structure of the renewable diesel? And I've been looking at the Department of Energy website and their data with their latest outlook, and it does look like they're trying to squeeze in some more 45Z consumption because of what we've seen so far.
Yeah, very good Commodity Week, you and Ellen Dearden, Arlen Suderman. Now, I know Arlen wasn't there for part of the time, and you didn't hear all of what he had to say simply because he wasn't around. But he talked about politics and the idea, and I think that this might play into your Reagan era, although it would be the Soviets at the time. The idea that President Xi and President Trump actually kind of need each other at this point. She in a bit of trouble. Trump still fine with his base, but the rest of the country having some more issues with him. So it's interesting to watch that and to listen to Arlen. It's a really good program coming up again. And I'm wondering, maybe you could give us a little preview of what you're thinking about as it's related to 1985?
Yeah, you hit it on the nose. Russia is there again in the form of Russia instead of the Soviet Union. But I would also say that China is playing both the role of Japan in terms of the currency market and oversupplying the world market with its goods through a cheap currency, which it is correcting. The Chinese offshore currency made a 33-month high this week, and I think that's due to President Trump's policies in large part. But they are working against us in terms of currencies like Japan did in the mid-80s, and they are also in that military side of the equation and strategic issues politically. And I've told clients, and I think I said this on Commodity Week, the way I'd frame it when it comes to soybeans, because I'm so concerned about the world supplies, I trust President Trump when it comes to his policies. I'm not so sure I trust China so much when it comes to buying our soybeans, and that's kind of how I'm playing it this year.
All right, so the fundamentals, though, of just supply put this marketplace where? Neutral to sideways, and then there's a lot of other things at play that we just don't quite understand yet.
Yeah, I added about 4% in my crush number for 26-27 and still came up with almost a 500 million bushel carryover for soybeans because I'm at 87.5 million acres because of this rotation and the bean corn ratio, for lack of a better term. But if we don't see any bigger domestic soybean oil usage than what I've plugged in, I think we're at about 5 billion gallons. The trade's thinking 5.61. That's kind of what I was bouncing off of. But if I don't get anything more than that, and we come off with a 180 Brazilian crop, it doesn't justify China buying US beans at a much higher cost against what they could buy in Brazil, especially with that new Xangay port in Peru and that intercontinental railroad that they're working on right now.
All things you've been watching and telling us about. I appreciate that too. We'll hear more from you next week and then again at the All Day Ag Outlook on Tuesday, March 3rd. Thanks much.
Looking forward to it, Todd. Thank you.
Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalCommResearch.com. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Now, on the 19th day of February, that's next Thursday, the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale will take place in Springfield at the State Fairgrounds. Now, the manager of that event is Travis Mateer. He's an extension beef cattle specialist right here at the University of Illinois. Thank you much, Travis, for taking some time with me. This event is important not only to the state of Illinois and beef cattle production here, but across the Midwest. Can you tell me about how it has improved herds throughout the United States?
So the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale has a 58-year history, and it's a long, distinguished history. I've only been the manager of the sale for the last 15 years. There were a lot of really good folks and a lot of efforts before me to establish the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. But it has a long history of being a source for performance genetics. And again, as you mentioned, these cattle that are raised by progressive Illinois seed stock operations go back to Illinois purebred and commercial breeders, but also throughout the Midwest and the United States of supplying genetics that are, I think, really meet a strict standard. That's what the sales history has been benchmarked on, setting a standard. We catalog bulls every year. There's bulls that don't make it to Springfield, and because they have to meet so many criteria to be there. There's strict performance goals, strict herd health requirements. And then obviously, we've really gone, I think, made tremendous strides in EPDs and expected progeny differences, and then those predictors of what profit and what performance is going to look like in these bulls' offspring. These bulls, again, for this year, will also sell with genomic enhanced EPDs. So just more proof is in the pudding, less risk. And then I think the value that producers find in the genetics at the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale has been a big part of its history, because we have so many repeat buyers that come back year after year and find the value in the bull. So from my perspective, I love working with a good group of progressive consigners that raise genetics that meet the standards. And then, from a commercial standpoint of outfitting operations with genetics that they know can go into their herd and add profitability and add and generate revenue, is important for our state's beef industry. And so it's just a privilege to work with the people on both sides, the bulls. And really, I just enjoy continuing the tradition of the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale.
On that note, this is a data-driven sale, and most of it, I think, is not collected on the date of the sale.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the big part here is there is a lot of information. There is a lot of data, and we try to help producers navigate that. I think if we look at what these bulls are going to be asked to do, a bull purchase this year will result in calves in the next, 2 to 5 years. Those heifers that are retained are going to be in the herd for the next 3 to 7 to 10 years. And then the daughters of those, the cow families that are established, that's generational. And so these purchases do matter. This investment that you're making at this time does matter. So you need to have the data. You need to make those good decisions. And then the breeders behind them, like we have, the bulls that sell with a guarantee, and the breeders that are willing to work with you in the future.
Hey, thank you, Travis. The Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale will take place next Thursday. That's the 19th of February at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. Check it out at iptbullsale.com. That stands for Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, iptbullsale.com. You can attend in person, of course, or you can watch and bid online. Let's check in on the global growing regions. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to get right into this. I know that farmers are worried, particularly here in East Central Illinois and across a large part of the Midwest, and they've been asking, when do we really start to worry about the dry drought conditions that we are in and the coming growing season? Now, part of it is they kind of like that to persist for a little bit, I think, so that they could get, a little higher price. But they really are worried. Do they need to be?
Well, an Illinois farmer, no. I mean, we honestly don't even need to worry until, I'd say, the second half of March. We can sometimes make up all of a fall and winter drought with just a good pattern at the end of March, beginning of April. But that starts to encroach on our ability to get a new crop established and get our planting in with more wide open windows. But anyway, I'll tell you this, Todd. I do know there are people that are more worried than the Illinois farmers right now. And I'll tell you where two of them live, because I got to see them both this week. Earlier in the week, I was with a group in Iowa, but a couple of folks were from Nebraska. And Nebraska is bone dry. and their major concerns, given that they hit, they were in the upper 70s over the last week with temperatures windy, dry, and it is just, I mean, there's no snow. There's no snow across the state. The Platte River system is at record low in terms of its snowpack that'll feed the river, and the whole of the Missouri Basin has no snow on it. But it was interesting, Todd. I was in Vegas talking to our western sales region yesterday for Nutrien, and when I showed the forecast to them, I mean, I almost lost it myself, but there was a almost standing ovation, loud cheering. They were all excited because it is finally breaking. Like, no one has ever, it's never happened before where there's just been cheering in the middle of one of my talks, but I felt like $1 million. But I mean, here's what I told them. I said, look, we had one time period at the end of December, beginning of January, where we had good flow into the West. Now, it did not get all the way to the Midwest, but it was in the West. Since then, it shut down. Big high pressure cell moved in, and they've been bone dry and very warm. In fact, they were talking about how a lot of their tree fruits, tree nuts, and things, the trees are blooming right now in Central Valley of California. And they're like, this is a little early. We've got to get more moisture in place. And I showed them the forecast, and Todd, there's a western trough. So all that I just told you is to tell you that there is a trough of cold air coming into the West. It's going to push mild air over us, and it's going to take the jet stream from where it has been, which is attacking us from the Northwest, and get it coming out of the Southwest. And I'm pretty excited to see it. But I'll be honest with you, you want to know one funny thing? I'm reading a book right now, Todd. I know we always talk about books.
Right.
But I'm reading a book about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald back November 10, 1975. And I don't know if the author knew how important a statement was that he made. And he goes, well, you can't forget that the big winter storm that hit Lake Superior that wrecked the Edmund Fitzgerald started in New Mexico. And I'm like, no, that's super important, man. I'm talking to him, even though it's a recording, right? And I'm like, that's it, Todd. It's flow from the Southwest. So we got a chance of rain this weekend. We got more mild conditions coming in. And slowly but surely, we're going to start to work against this drought. So you can tell I'm a bit excited. You can tell this pattern change is needed. And we'll see how it all does.
Okay, so I have to go back to the Friday I missed with you because I was on the Hudson River with the ice floes that day. And holy smokes, that was cold out there. We went out to the Statue of Liberty, and I have picked up and am reading The Great Departure because I went to Ellis Island. It's pretty data dense, but it is about the Eastern European immigration into the United States, and then about 30% of them float back.
Wow.
As well. Yeah, I know. So just really interesting. Okay, enough about books. Go on. So what do you see? What was that forecast that made everybody stand?
Yeah, so Todd, I mean, there's a chance that over the next 2 weeks, there could be 100 more inches of snow put at the highest peaks of the Sierra Nevada. We could even hit the Central Rockies with snow. And right now, the Colorado Basin, that's what feeds the Colorado River. You know, it's the lowest it's been in 10 years in terms of snowpack. Now, the last holdout for moisture is going to be the Central and Northern Plains. And we're going to have to monitor that because they're going to get the moisture at the end of this time period. And if they do not get much, we're going to watch overwinter drought continue there. But what's breaking, Todd, is exactly what you described. We have been so cold east. And yeah, the Northeast has been hammered with cold weather and big snows and so mild west. You have to flip that around, get the mild east and the cold west to get the jet to weigh things up and open up the Gulf. Now, the question we all have is, do we have to go back to cold weather, right? My kids, that's the first thing I got asked when I got home, like, hey, is it going to be this warm for a while? And I'm like, no, hi, Dad, glad you're home. You know, did you bring me anything? It's like, no, it's just going to be warm. And I'll tell you, there are some signals that we may deal with at the end of this month, beginning of March, another opportunity to access that Arctic air. But with the polar vortex relocating from Scandinavia to Siberia, it's on the other side of the planet, it's going to be hard to get sustained. You know, I'm talking a week and a half or 2 weeks of Arctic air in place. I think we have a couple more cold shots. It's just not, the risk of that sustained cold coming through. So I think we're going to get through the rest of February on the more mild side of things. question is, do the March and April rains revive or kill the overwinter drought?
Yeah, back up just a second. I want to go to March the 3rd. That's the day that you and I are supposed to be at the all-day. I got, look, you're making a trip to the airport, too.
Yeah.
As soon as you're done. And honestly, I'm a little excited on the idea that we might have some snow, some cold, just because we've done the all-day ag outlook in the middle of blizzards and everybody comes.
Yeah.
it's fun. I like good weather, too, so I prefer the good weather. But all-day ag outlook, you're going to kick that off, willag.org. You can purchase your tickets right now. Now turn to that longer range. What does it tell you for the Midwest?
You're right, man. Good weather can kill a good farmer meeting. I mean, I had one in June a few years ago. It was the first non-windy day in Indiana. There were supposed to be over 400 growers showing up. Only 4 showed up because they were all getting work done, you know? And so I get it. But I'd say this. Right now, there seems to be increasing evidence that we might see what we typically see, which is a bit of a tightening up of our early spring windows. New models that are out from now through the end of March, even into early April, want to keep the Ohio Valley, which we're a part of, you know, they want to keep that on the wetter side of average. Now, that's part of a longer-term trend, so we should expect that. What I'll be most interested in, Todd, is in spring, does the Delta end up getting plenty of rain and revive their soil moisture? That's a good indicator of our early season drought risk. Basically, if we stay relatively wet to our south. In other words, if Matt Bennett, if you're talking to him and he's complaining about it being too wet, we're typically in pretty good shape for our, you know, early summer weather patterns. Right now, though, Todd, I have to tell you, if the markets are going to use the forecast models to tell some sort of a weather story, they're going to see one that honestly is risk off. I mean, the models are not aggressive on heat. They're not aggressive on dryness. And as a result, there's not going to be any reason for them to look at those models and say, oh, we better get prepared. There's increased risk of a problem. So that's the downfall of having a good weather forecast going into summer.
Risk on in South America, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, it's trying to rain down there in Argentina, and Brazil's crop coming out fast, high NDVI, and no major weather forecast models suggesting that there's some big problem coming to South America. So we're also just sitting here going, all right, when's the trouble going to happen? And as we rapidly move toward an El Nino summer, is it going to show up in somewhere that matters? And that'll be what we'll be talking about.
All right. We'll look forward to talking with you again next Friday, the following one, and then having you at the Beef House on the third day of March. Thanks much.
You bet, Todd.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, where you can buy today your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook. Now, stay with us if you can. Commodity Week is up next on our home station and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Otherwise, you can listen to it online right now.